Right, good afternoon, everyone. I'm the local group leader of Christians in Science Bristol, with a science, a physics background. Title of my talk, as you can see, is on the God of Samson, or Delilah. The issue I want to address is our understanding of God's character. On the one hand, traditionally, we've seen God as omnipotent, and as Collins pointed out very ably, very much succeeding in carrying out his plans, and he's omniscient as well. But recently, there's been a response of some Christians to modern science, where we see that we consider that God can't break his own laws of physics. So on this slide, you can see we seem to be limiting God to influencing natural worlds only in initial design, and thereafter, maybe this is a caricature, a helpless onlooker. We're talking about miracles only within quantum uncertainty. We're talking about private revelation to humans, which can't be proved by science, and wonderfully Collins proved us wrong on that. And also about suffering being unintentional from God and something that he is helpless to do anything about. So my task today, where the Samson and Delilah comes in really, is that the traditional view is the Samson view, and then Colin comes in with that. But what I'm trying to critique is a kind of modern bent, which I see as a kind of betrayal of God's character as a strong God, and I'm just labelling that the God of Delilah. That's going to be all on, we're not going to go into the story of Samson and Delilah. It's just a label. So that's my task is therefore to recover Samson. So I'm using three guides from theology and three illustrations from science. So my three guides are up here. So we've got Thomas Aquinas, Thomas Aquinas, Alfred Whitehead, and Sarah Coakley. So starting with Thomas Aquinas, his idea is that God is omnipotent and omniscient, the future already existing. God is all-powerful. Anything he wants to happen happens just like that, because Aquinas was pre-science. So Aquinas is trying to reconcile Greek thought with theology. A completely powerful God. And therefore, God has to permit sin knowingly and willingly, and he does this in order to strengthen the saints. It's for the greater good. So God is quite happy for some sinners to go to hell, damnation. Aquinas is quite barefaced about this, and he's happy about it, which I can understand a lot of people wouldn't be. Second guide, Alfred Whitehead. So this is a completely different approach. Whitehead was a mathematician, early 20th century, and he had this idea that the future was open. The future doesn't exist yet, even to God. This doesn't necessarily mean that God is sort of helpless. He is a creative improviser. God is aiming for beauty, beautiful unity and diversity. The idea is that entities are the basic units of creation, thinking and feeling entities. Atoms and molecules are secondary in his scheme, and there's no room for suffering, which is possibly a weakness, but it's a lovely future he paints. Thirdly, Sarah Coakley, who is now Professor of Divinity at Cambridge, her idea is that far from evolution being rendering God redundant, which is obviously a lot of atheists are saying this, she looks at evolution in the aspect of it rewarding sacrificial altruism. So the use of game theory, which actually is used by atheists to try and explain why altruism appears in evolution, even though it's survival of the fittest. Sarah, she's turning this around. She's saying, look, if evolution is rewarding altruism, intentional, sacrificial altruism, that's something that evolution can't explain because it's not intentional. We are intentionally altruistic, but evolution can then you talk about So it's about sacrificial altruism being part of God's plan right from day one. he thinks in terms of sacrifice and suffering as a good thing and bringing about a better society. So these three guys, my proposal here is to try and combine these three approaches in some way and to bring in three further, what I'm calling science parables. So first of all, clay parable. This is from some work I did as a postdoc in Grenoble, studying dynamics of water in minerals using neutron scattering. So the x-axis here is neutron energy loss. So we're firing neutrons into clay, and it's making the water spin round. It's called libration, a kind of rotational oscillation. And the y-axis is just the neutron count for that particular energy loss. And it's a bit like a frequency spectrum. It's telling you that, so this dark one is a mineral where you've got three particular modes of oscillation, which are kind of fixed by the mineral. And the other two lines are clays in which the water is freer. It's moving around, the water is different environments. But overall, the pattern is consistent with the environment. And if you change the environment, you change the pattern. So this is, for me, a pattern of free will. It's a parable, if you like, of free will. So we're the water molecules. We have freedom within our environment, but if you look at the whole pattern over time, then we are actually quite predictable. But there's a scatter from the neutron. So we do have individual free will from day to day, but overall, God can predict what we're going to do once he knows us well, as you might be able to predict what your husband or wife or best friend is likely to do in the next, you know, day or so. So my second parable, I've done some recordings on a rather nice digital recorder of our local orchestra in which I play the viola. So the x-axis are frequency, which is very much analogous to energy of neutrons, but it's the frequency of the sound. And the y-axis is the volume for each frequency. It's a kind of, again, a fingerprint. And so the different lines are different sound. So at the bottom we have the background, which is just silence, relative silence. At the top with the yellow one, for example, is an orchestra in full throat. So everything's blasting, you know, this is actually Dvorak, I think. And then the blue is the wind section. And then, the purple is the string section. So they're all slightly different. Obviously, we know that they have different sounds, but I'm suggesting this is an analogy for God and us. So God, in my view, is the conductor. He directs us. He's dependent on our sound. He can't make a sound himself. Everything that happens is because of us, under God's direction. So I have this idea of God communicating quite, you know, consistently, fully, and continuously with his saints. But there's a sense in which he wants us to develop a sweet tone. So are we a sweet sound in God's ear? And that's not about individual flamboyant acts. I think it's about a consistent character, perseverance, patience, the fruits of the Spirit, the love letter of God in our hearts, that we are, the most effective witness is a consistent behavior, consistently loving, consistently altruistic. And are we listening to God as our conductor? The third parable, this is now going over to genetics. Now, this is quite personal to me, because in my family, my husband's family has got haemophilia. My family, my parents' family, has got Kennedy's disease. And it's in both families. So this was something I wasn't aware of until we looked into it. So this is the genetics diagram of the chromosome. So women, obviously, XX. Men, XY. Now, what I didn't realize until I looked into this is that the actual disease is on the X chromosome, not the Y chromosome. It's on the X chromosome. So here's a male sufferer. I'm calling him Christ type, and you'll see why. So the red means infected, if you like, with this gene for either haemophilia, Kennedy's, and there are lots of others. He's suffering. Now, if he just had sons, they have got to get their Y chromosome from him. And his Y chromosome is pure. It's X chromosome that's a problem. So he is giving his Y chromosome to his sons, and therefore they are completely pure of that gene, whatever it is, haemophilia, candidis. So I think it's a bit like Christ, who takes on the sin. He suffers all his life from the syndrome, but if he only has sons, then the male's offspring, sons, do not have the gene, and neither will any of their descendants. And it's one generation, once for all, wiped out. Now, of course, we know the females have carried the gene, and they don't suffer. But that's kind of a side issue. For me, this is illustrating the completeness of redemption. And that's a picture within creation itself. This is my summary then. So we've got Whitehead. I'm starting with Whitehead. I like his idea of an open future, but I'm arguing that this does not mean that we're weak gods. We're not talking to Delilah here. I'm saying that God can be confident of achieving his purpose because he has means of persuasion in time. The clay parable illustrates the idea of free will with a pattern which we can predict. God can predict, we can predict our closest friends. What I hadn't said is that because it's dependent on the environment, one possible way of God acting is to actually possibly tilt the pinball machine in that he alters the environment in which we move to mold our character. Secondly, the sound parable. I'm thinking now back to Whitehead of the improvising God, that he's a conductor who trains his musicians as well as directing them. And our aim is really consistent sweet sound, not just individual saintliness, which is really a Coakley idea. So our destiny is harmony, according to Whitehead, but also that suffering has a place. It's not incidental. It's a kind of boot camp idea that we're developing altruism and that future society will also be sacrificially altruistic. And the genetics idea is that suffering ends completely with redemption in Christ. So I hope the result is that I'm showing that we have a God of Samson, not Delilah. Thank you. I'll just put my... I think, I guess we'd have to face the possibility if future really is open and if we really have free will, then you could argue there are instances where God might particularly try somebody. Suppose he went, like George Miller in the orphanage, which is actually in Bristol, they would just pray and these checks would just keep coming in. So I would assume that meant God was prompting Christians to send anonymous checks to this George Miller orphanage. And there's always the right amount to cover their bills. So possibly he might ask someone and they just say no, so you ask someone else. But that's very dangerous thinking, if you like, because in the case of crucifixion, it has to be just right. So I don't really know. I mean, I'm just suggesting that free will is a kind of pattern thing, because it's true, you can predict someone's behavior when you know them very well. And there's nothing wrong with that, but they still have the ability to kind of scatter within that. But obviously we're not water molecules, we're far more complex than that.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, speaker, again. Okay.